Sati Deve, Gaurabani, Pracharane, Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Paschachade, Satarane, Om Agena, Timirandasya, Yenanjana, Salakaya, Shakshurun Militam, Nina, Tasmai, Shi, Gurave, Namaha, Shri Chaitanya, Manobisham, Shtapitam, Yena, Bhutale, Vayam rupa katam ayam datati swapadantikam Vanchakalpa tarupasya Kripa sindhu vayeva cha Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Reva Sadikor Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Jai Guru Varga, Guru Varga ki jai. And Paranga Pramana, Avadhut Prabhu, you already have some questions? Brahma Samhita, Chintamani is building block of spiritual wall. Yes. That is what we understand. The manifested portion of the Lord. Chintamani or Sandini Shakti. There is also the cognitive aspect, the samvit potency. There is also the pleasure potency, Ladini potency. There are three things there in the spiritual world, Satchidananda sometimes we refer to as. And whatever we have, Krishna has. Otherwise, where are we getting it from? Of course, we interpret it in our own way. Not that we should think that our interpretation of these bodies and so forth in any way refers to Krishna. Our conception, our perception of things, and the ultimate reality of things, that is two different. There are two different things. One is the actual thing itself, in and for itself, and then that thing as it appears to us. So these are called the phenomenal and the noumenal. Phenomenal is what appears to us. And the noumenal is what is there before us in truth. So what we analyze things to be, that may not be necessarily what is there in the same exact way. So we should not transport what we understand to the absolute plane. What's going on? Something, all those noises, what's going on?
Prabhuji, don't add them.
All leaving, I see.
Don't add them, Prabhuji.
I see. So what we perceive and what is there to be perceived, they may be two different things because our perception is imperfect. And we filter that through our ideas. And so that comes out in a distorted way. We should not automatically assume that what we have concluded is the nature of our body or the nature of reality is necessarily identical with reality. It is not. Reality as it is in and for itself, reality as we experience it may be two different things entirely. That's why Maya is there. Maya means that we do not perceive things as they are in truth. We are under the influence of illusion, because that is actually not the way of coming in touch with the absolute truth through perception. Actually, perception is a very defective method, direct perception. Pratyaksha is a very imperfect method of coming to understand what is what. another process is required. Of submissively receiving what is there through love. Now that is another thing, how to understand that process. That is the mysterious process of Bhakti Yoga, the mystical process. The mystical process of Bhakti Yoga cannot be accommodated by the analytical process of this modern rationalistic thought. Modern rationalistic thinking cannot accommodate the mystical process of perceiving the Lord as he is in his own truth. Bhakti Yoga. Anupalaksha Vartmane. A very interesting word. Anupalaksha Vartmane, the Lord of the Inconceivable Way. A Sanskrit word. The Lord of the Inconceivable Way. The Inconceivable Way is Bhakti Yoga. The process of loving God and knowing everything just through love. So to understand Krishna's form and what he has in his body and so forth and so on, and what our own body is composed of, that is too, that is a different thing than what the material scientists and medical practitioners, anatomists and so forth and so on say, what they tell us, and what is told there in the scriptures. These are two different things. And so we put our faith in the scripture, the scriptural explanation. Anyhow, we will see. Sridhar Maharaj is here giving some ontological conception of what is the ultimate underlying reality like. And on page 83, there's a paragraph there. We'll start with this paragraph. Although the Buddhists and other atheists argue that consciousness is a material thing, I say that there is no material thing. If I am to answer the question of whether or not consciousness is produced from matter, then I shall say that nothing is material. Whatever we feel is only a part of consciousness. Everything is an idea. This actually is Hegel's conception. And he showed how everything resolves into the absolute idea. What do you call the idea? And then beyond that idea, there are different concepts that are emanating, that are connected with that absolute idea, and dialectically resolve into that absolute idea as the complete whole. So everything is an idea. We are concerned only with the consciousness from beginning to end of our experience. I've also explained this in several of our talks, how the concept and the thing, the thought and the thing are connected. And the idea of the judgment mind is a judging faculty of judgment. This is a cow. I explain how the thing that is in front of us is called this. And where does the cow come from? That this comes from the mind, from the idea of the cow. And even the, what do you call them? Psychiatrists who study the neurophysiologists, who study the relation of the senses to the brain. They know that only some electrical currents are produced by vision. You show some light in front of the person you are analyzing, the brain you are analyzing, the brain of the person you are analyzing, you show some lights to him, some pictures or whatever. And the only thing they can measure are the electrical current, electrical activity of the brain. That's all they can measure. They can't measure what that person is actually experiencing. Imagine he's experiencing something, and that comes, and they determine that by the fact that some little movement in the electrical currents is observed on their oscillators, on their screens, on their monitors. The oscilloscopes measure some kind of fluctuation of electrical potential. They see some movement in their oscilloscopes and they think, okay, so this person has experienced and this part of the brain has become active when he experienced such and such a thing. And that part of the brain has become active when he experiences another thing. And so they conclude that by that little electrical blip that he is seeing a cow and that the cow is actually out there in the real world and he is seeing that. But we know it doesn't happen like that. Whatever we see, someone may see a cow. Another person may see something else under some influence of hallucinatory drugs. They give that person some drug, and they won't see the cow. They will see some other. They may see a monster. They may see a god. We don't know what they'll see. Just depending on how the condition of the body is. And what the chemicals are in the body. So who's to say that what is out there is actually the cow? There's no objective. There's a subjective experience. It can't be described in objective terms. Although, by convention, everyone says, yes, that's a cow. Therefore, we say it's a cow. But that's not how the true situation has to be interpreted. Some idea of a cow has to be there in order for us to see cow or say cow. But materialists have it all backwards. That's the inverted tree. And the Bhagavad Gita has explained that this material world is like an inverted tree. And whatever we see here is actually the reflection, upside down reflection of this spiritual world. So we think everything is coming from the material world into the mind, but it's just the reverse. Everything is coming from the mind, and that is being projected out as a material phenomenon. And a detailed scientific explanation of that whole process is given in Hegel, the third part of his philosophy, subjective concept, or the subjective idea. I have explained these things, very complicated, no doubt. And hardly anyone has understood him, even after 200 years here. He's written that book. Very few have understood, if any.
What is that, Manas? Third portion. Third portion of subjective
third,
evolution.
Third part of his Encyclopedia of Philosophical Sciences. It's called Subjective Idea. The subjective idea, the objective idea, and the absolute idea. He has mentioned three parts in his third part of the Encyclopedia of Philosophical Sciences.
Okay, Maharaj.
That's a more advanced study. We're not prepared to do that here. Anyhow, we are concerned only with consciousness from beginning to end of our experience. Of course, because whatever is experience means that there must be consciousness. Without consciousness, there is no such thing as experience. So certainly experience is based upon consciousness. Something has to happen in consciousness to be able to call it experience. Only a conscious person can have experiences. So the experience itself means nothing without the consciousness. There is no such thing. So certainly everything is based on consciousness, all experience. Beyond that, we cannot go. Everything is an idea, the stone, the tree, the house, the body, all our ideas. The plane of consciousness is very much closer to us than we perceive.
Maharaj, you have explained in one of satsang that, you know, that we posted, that thinking is in between spiritual world and material world. And actually, that idea of, you know, cow or say these names, that is, we are, you know, what you can say, projection, that we are, you know, getting that idea from that world and we are seeing that here. So,
right.
Maharaj, is it possible that, you know, the way we are studying at present, we are understanding things, to understand these things in that manner? Like, what way we are understanding things in the modern science?
Is it possible to come to the conclusion of Vedanta? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, Mother.
Is it possible to come to the conclusion of Vedanta? Yes, if we are very careful in our thinking, if we are ready to critically analyze everything we are thinking and how that thinking is occurring, we can come to the Vedanta conclusion, no doubt. That's why I thought the Brahma Jigyasa is there. That is the inquiring stage of learning about the absolute truth. The Vedanta is meant for that only. So one who studies very carefully his knowledge acquiring process, how the knowledge works, then he must come to the conclusion that that we have mentioned here, and that Hegel is somehow from some genius he has been able to conclude the same thing. A wonderful genius he was. He was able to conclude the same thing, and in a very systematic way he presented the whole story, the whole development of the ideas. So this requires very careful and detailed dialectical thought, not even ordinary thought.
Maharaj, it cannot be like an experimented, it seems. Can it be experimented also, Maharaj, this concept?
No, this is not from experiment. What you are examining, the experiment means, experiment also means experience. Experience is there. Experiment means it's based on consciousness. So how can the consciousness be experimented upon? It's rather the basis of the experiment or the experience. So you can't get to the consciousness from the experience. You have to do that through critical analysis. That means thinking.
So, Maharaj, in this entire thing, when we are saying that we are concerned with consciousness from beginning to the end of the experience, so apart from consciousness, is there anything else which forms the whole? Say, in the idea of an object.
I can't read this. I can't read all of that and talk at the same time, but we have to just give me a little chance to put in small sentences what you want to ask to make a big long thing. Otherwise, we all be diverted from what we are reading to read that. But in a short way, what questions you have. Sorry, now. You want to say something, Prashottam? What is your question?
Maharaj, as we have said, we are concerned with consciousness from beginning to the end of, say, any experience. So now, say an experience. So definitely, consciousness is a very the common
fundamental. Fundamental.
So now, definitely experience. Consciousness is required to experience something. This is quite clear. But to form an experience, does it necessitate the existence of some other, you know, reality other than consciousness?
Well, I mean, it depends on how we see that. If we analyze what is consciousness, consciousness means there must be an object of consciousness. Beyond consciousness, there must also be an object of consciousness, right?
Yes.
So, consciousness then means that there's a duality involved. It is not simply consciousness, but there must also be an object of consciousness. That's one side. The other side is there must also be a self-consciousness. Consciousness is conscious of something other than itself, called the object of consciousness. And then we also recognize that consciousness, because it can be aware of something, can also be conscious of itself. That is called self-consciousness, or the self.
Right.
So there are three things. There's the self, there's consciousness, and there's the object. Three things come out of consciousness automatically. And when we analyze it very deeply. So that each idea leads to other ideas. And that's how the whole is developed. If we analyze, I heard that if you analyze a grain of sand in a complete detail, you must come to the conclusion of God. All of your reality is contained in that grain of sand if you analyze it very carefully. Because again, you say grain of sand, then you have the mind that's observing that grain of sand. Already you've included mind. That's a grain of sand. And then the consciousness, the idea. So each and everything, when analyzed in great detail, that means critical analysis, when subjected to critical analysis, then the whole must be reached. because it is all that we are dealing with. Om Purnamada Purnamida. The whole is there, and everything is emanating from that whole. So we can't escape it. We think in piecemeal fashion, analyzing everything into the little parts and parts and atoms, but we don't analyze how that is integrated within a whole. And it is, everything is.
Yes.
There is nothing separate from God. Nothing separate from Him. Otherwise, there would be two gods. If there was something independent of Krishna, there would be two absolutes. That means that we have defeated the whole concept of absolute. Absolute means that everything is dissolved in that. Whatever there is, that is dissolved, and it has its ultimate dissolution in the absolute, and it's an ultimate resolution there also.
Right.
So the plane of consciousness is very much closer to us than we perceive. In other words, I mentioned this also, that the quantum mechanical scientists, they also say that consciousness is the first level of experience that we have. The first thing we experience is that we are conscious. Before we experience anything else, we have to say the first experience is that we are conscious, that I am, and I know I am.
Yes, ma'am.
At the first level of experience, then from there we can experience other things in our consciousness. And what is shown as a particular thing is far away from that first experience, and then the other things are secondary. We are involved only with ideas. We can't go outside that. Everything within our experience is part of our mind. This was the conclusion. And question, the Puranas say that there are 8,400,000 species of life. Are they only ideas? Yes, all ideas, Guru Maharaj says. Consciousness is always in the primary position. And these ideas are real because they are also originally present in the spiritual reality of Vrindavan. Nothing is eliminated in our conception of reality. Everything is harmonious. Everything has its proper position. Nothing is to be eliminated. The only thing necessary is harmony. Only our outlook, our angle of vision needs to be changed. But in order to have that kind of vision, we must give up being self-centered. So I was explaining just now that reality is by itself and for itself, and our perception of reality is something different. That's called phenomenal appearance. This is, what is that? The phenomenal appearance is based on my perception, based on me. In other words, my self-centered perception of things. I try to judge reality on the basis of my self-centered perception of things, and that will be called self-centeredness. Now, in order to come to the absolute truth as it is in and for itself, we have to give up that self-centeredness. How do we give that up? By coming before the Tattva Darshana, the Guru, the qualified Guru who has already given up that self-centered perceptual process of knowing, and sees rather through the descending process, Shastra Chakshus, through the eyes of the scriptures, through the eyes of the Guru Parampara. That is, it becomes his vision, what is coming down, what is being received from the higher realm, from the absolute realm, which is beyond the self-centered perception of things. That kind of vision. So from the self-centered position, then we think, I am the Lord. What I say, that is the way it is. And I am the determiner of my world.
So that means, Maharaj, behind the experience, Maharaj, behind the process of experiencing, so since this experiencing is a very fundamental aspect of consciousness, so then from this analogy that we have just now, discussed, so it the conclusion comes that behind the experience is the absolute or the Brahman.
What's that?
behind
Behind the
experience,
experience is Brahman, Adi Brahman.
Is the
Is
Brahman.
that what you're saying? Oh, we can say it like
Is
that.
that yeah. We can't say Maharaj like that.
We can say it like that, yes. We can say that. That behind all experience is Brahman. Brahman means consciousness. The primal consciousness, the undifferentiated, more or less undifferentiated consciousness, or universal would be a better term, because from the Vaishnava perspective, Brahman is also differentiated. To be consciousness, there must be differentiation, just like I'm saying. If we look deeply into what consciousness is, we'll find there is an object there, and there is a self-consciousness there also. So Brahman must have all these things. If we say Brahman is consciousness, then it must have this duality of subject and object, and it must have self, also self-consciousness, or self. Is the idea of consciousness.
Ideal.
The idea? Ideal? Ideal or idea?
Idea, Maharaj, idea.
Idea, yes. Idea, yes. The idea is certainly conscious. The idea is the whole. And according to Bhagavatam, that whole from which everything else is coming is conscious. Abhigya. Janmadasya tanvayad itartas charteshu abhigyasvarat. That from which everything else is coming is conscious, abhigyasvarat, and independently conscious. He doesn't depend for his consciousness on anything else. So that totality of all of reality is the idea, the ultimate idea, the absolute idea, and that is conscious. Generally, we have a wrong conception of ideas. We think idea means something abstract, something in our head. In the material world, we have an abstract, they call it abstract conception of idea. That idea is something in my head, something that I make up. Oh, this is my idea. But no, idea exists before I exist. The absolute idea, and this understood properly, exists before I do. I come from that idea. I am part of that idea. I come from it. I can't exist if I don't exist first in that idea. Plato said there was a world of forms.
Who is typing there? I think it's such a... No, this is typing.
Okay.
From the mic of the laptop. Somebody doesn't use a headset. Like
so the idea is certainly self-conscious. In the higher conception of understanding the idea, the true conception of the idea, not based on our abstract notion of it, and the idea is also the self-conscious. That is its highest aspect. My highest development is its own self-consciousness, and that, you know, we can't call it it if it's self-conscious. It must be a personal form, a personal conception of God. And we'll find that also if you look in Hegel, Science of Logic, you'll find him, how that is so, basically. The idea is constituted by thinking, dialectical thinking. And whatever is thinking, that must be personal. It must be a person there. It must be a consciousness there. So ideas are developed from thinking. And thinking means that there must be behind that person or a consciousness. Wherever there is thinking, there is personality. Like that. So idea is a thought construct, we can say. Not exactly, but something like that. And therefore, if thinking is involved, then consciousness and personality must be involved. Then he's asking why Are we chanting Hare Krishna so that we come to a higher platform? Well, now that's, yes, we can say like that, that if Krishna is the absolute idea, then by meditating on that idea, Krishna, in the sound vibrational form, we can come to that platform of that, where that transcendental original idea is coming from. What is represented by Krishna, the sound Krishna, and the original source of Krishna, that is one and the same. Huh? From our point of view, when we think Krishna is a representation of the Supreme Absolute Truth, that's what we call an abstract idea. But from the absolute platform, that idea, Krishna, and the sound Krishna that represents that idea, they are one and the same. And by meditating on that sound and hearing the proper interpretation of it from the proper source, we can come to that higher platform. We'll be dragged there. Our conditioning can be peeled off by proper hearing and realization through practical activity. Practical activity means that we have to cultivate the attitude for entering that world also. And that is the attitude of humility and submission. And then we will find ourselves floating in that world, a member of that world. What is karma? How it influences us? Karma means activities that are not directed toward Krishna. That's called fruitive activities. Under the delusion of the self-centered existence of the jiva, that the jiva thinks, I am the Lord. I am the Lord of all I survey. I can do this and I can do that. I can mold the world according to my plan. Then, from that attitude, that's called false ego, because that is not our actual position, from that attitude, then whatever we do under that false ego will produce what we call karma. There is already a center of the universe, that is Krishna. Bhoktaram jagyatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram. He is the center of everything. And, but I am posing myself as a center in opposition to the actual center. Because of that attitude, opposing attitude to the Supreme Lord, then some reaction will come. I am thrown into the reactionary plane, and whatever I do, that will produce a reaction that is called karma. Karma means fruit of activity. I mean doing something to get some result, as if I am the. It is meant for me. Whatever I do, it is meant for my benefit. That is called fruit of activity, and that will produce some reaction. So in order to get beyond that platform, we have to recognize that there is a center, is not me. And how do I serve that center? And that is bhakti, and that is beyond karma. No karma will come from that. And I've given that example. If you are fighting and you kill someone, then you have to pay. Then you don't pay anything. There's no karma for killing because you're doing it on the basis of the country. Whereas if you kill for your own benefit, then you have to get some punishment. Whatever you do selflessly, or some higher cause than yourself, then no reaction will come. But if you do it selfishly, then the reaction will come. That's karma. That's the way karma works. Karma works only if you do it for yourself. If you do it for Krishna, no karma will come to hurt you. No karma will come to take its toll from you.
Maharaj, what I can say.
Wait a minute. What's that? Wait, let me finish with, let me take I will do the first question, then we can you can ask a question, all right? One falls down from Rosalie. You say one falls from Tatasha is the first position. I also get quotes from Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta not to say the same as Bhakti.
Typing. I hear like a galloping. Somebody's typing and I hear that after galloping of horses. Somebody should use the
headphones. Prabhu,
no, I'm not typing anything.
No, Prabhu, just like blowing.
Mute your microphone. Mute the microphone as well. When you're not speaking, you can mute. Well, I don't say anything about this topic, only what I have heard, I'm repeating that. And Srila Mara said like that, so I'm accepting it. And Prabhupada also said, many, many places don't fall. And the scriptures say that also. Now, you say that there are other statements that say we do fall. You know, then what can I say? All I can say is that both statements are there. And so it is not wrong to say that we don't fall. It is not wrong. It is there in the scriptures. It is there in the words of our acharyas. And we can't simply ignore that and say this side is right and that side is wrong. That is nonsense. We cannot contradict the scripture. We cannot contradict who we don't know. Unless we have some scientific knowledge of those things, we can say, whatever I say, that doesn't mean anything, or whatever you say does not mean anything. So we accept the Shastra until we enter into a complete scientific realization of that activity and what is involved there. We can't say anything. We can say so many things, but it means nothing. So, only thing that we are entitled to say is that Prabhupada said, scriptures say, Srila Mara said, that don't fall to this material world from the spiritual sky.
Prabhupada many times say that we fall down, many times.
Okay.
So many times.
All right, I'm not saying that he didn't say that. But you are ignoring the fact that he said we don't fall. In many places you will find that. And don't ignore that fact. That's all I'm asking you. Don't ignore that fact. Don't become so one-minded.
Millions of times you said we fall down, and you said one time we don't.
Both are there. Both are there.
How do you reconcile? How do you reconcile it?
Contradictory. So the scriptures are contradictory in many places. We know that. So that means achintya. That's all. What we call contradictory is conceivable in the higher platform, but we have to go to that platform in order to conceive what is being said, why those two things are being said. Our understanding is not perfect. In fact, if you use understanding, you can't come to the absolute realization. Because absolute realization doesn't require understanding. There's some higher function in us that can capture that. That is called reason. But reason is not
done. Then you have to reject the
I know, I don't say that. I don't say you have to reject
that. That's what you do. That's what you do.
No, you're saying that, but I'm saying that whatever Prabhupada said, we don't fall. Ashutamar says we don't fall. Bhakti Vinod says we don't fall. And then you say there are other statements that say we do. So both are there. Now what can I say? What I say doesn't mean anything, but what they say, that is our how we get our information about those things. And we simply have to accept that one day maybe I will understand that. Maybe I'll come to realization of what those both, why both are there. If some higher realization comes to me, then we can say, okay, now I have resolved that for myself. But in the meantime, we don't merely fight with one another, say, oh, no, he said like this, and no, he said like that. And we make different parties. That is not coming to Krishna consciousness. That is not how we come. Or my understanding is imperfect. That we have to start with. I don't know. And whatever is said in there in the scriptures, I accept, even if it's contradictory. That my understanding is imperfect. That must be the conclusion. And one day I may, by the grace of Krishna, have a proper realization of those things and be able to accommodate and harmonize both. And that's possible, that's not impossible. So be patient. Both, let us just admit that both statements are there. And we are the humbly receiving that, and hoping that one day we may come to understand how that is. Both are possible from some higher understanding, higher platform. Then, Sushant Prabhu, you had a question?
Maharaj, actually, I was asking that, you know, like this authenticity of, you know, our actions are, you know, very important. Like this karma you were explaining, I was, you know, wanted to, you know, what you can say, that time I was telling Maharaj, like, you know, some actions may, like, you know, I am doing service, like some, you know, here in India, so many people are constructing temples also, like, you know, Krishna's temple. And, you know, so many, yes, you know, activities they are doing also on the name of devotion. So, Maharaj, you know, there is some discrimination, right, is needed in that. Sense, Maharaj.
Yes.
So,
what is actually for the center and what is for some other purpose? And what is the mood? What is the attitude? Just like there are those who are serving Narayan, the Sri Vaishnavas, they are serving,
yes,
Narayan, but we don't follow them. We say, no, that's not the highest. He goes, why? They are adding some Aishwarya. They are adding majesty to God. But we don't worship God as in a majestic form. We worship him as a coward boy. So we don't like to even think. We don't like to think of that kind of worship in such strict, with such strict rules and regulations. It must chant like this and it must sound like that and so forth and so on. And we think that is a disturbance on the path of devotion. The heart must be very soft to enter the plane of Krishna consciousness, Vrindavan Leela, based upon love. Of course, the worshippers of Narayan also have love for that, but it is a more formal kind of love. It's love that's tinged with so much formality. So the Ragabhaktas are not attracted by that. So again, the situation of the heart is very important. And that's why the association of the devotees of that plane is so important to us. So we learn those subtle things. It's not that everything can be written in a book. We go through life. We have so many experiences dealing with different people and so forth and so on, learning how to make decisions. Not everything can be found in a book about how to do that. Then how do we learn those things? We try to find associates who have that kind of a life already adopted within themselves through their associates. Like that. Community of Vaishnavas is necessary for us to enter into that spirit, into that mood, and develop those qualities that we can enter into that plane. And that is the process of our Vaishnava methodology. Not everything can be taught by either lectures or by reading books. Much of what we will gain about that plane will come through living. Actual life experience, what you call it. The School of Hard Knocks. You heard of that? The School of Hard Knocks. I have to get knocked around a bit through mistakes that we make. Can we learn from that also?
Thank you, Maras.
Both exploitation and renunciation must be given up. These two things cause this hallucination. Everything has its contribution to the service of the Supreme Center, and if we can understand that, we become free from this relative world. The material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. There is undesirability here from Brahma, who holds the highest position in this universe, with the lowest creature, a Brahma Bhuvanal Loka. Everyone is prone to misconception. On the other hand, everything in Vrindavan contributes toward the pastimes of Radha Govinda. Everything in Vrindavan is Krishna conscious, every tree, creeper, and shrub. How can they be useless or ordinary shrubs and creatures, creepers? Uddhava is the greatest devotee of Krishna, and he aspires to take birth as a creeper or a shrub in Vrindavan. What then is the value of the shrubs and creepers of Vrindavan? Should we think that Uddhava's aspiration is imaginary or theoretical with no practical value? Everything in Vrindavan is necessary for the pastimes of Radha Govinda. Everything in the spiritual environment has its indirect value. This is called Shantaras or Pasamela. It may be understood in this way, if a man does not harm anybody, even a fly or a mosquito, that does not mean that he is paralyzed or diseased. He is simply in a passive mood. So in Vrindavan, service may be rendered in a passive mood. The Yamuna River, the trees, the birds, and the insects are absorbed in rendering service in a passive mood. Finally, we got to some nectar. Govinda Nandini feels, finally, we got to some nectar. How this is so can be understood by the analogy of a drama. In a drama in the theater, an actor may play the part of a dead man. As his body is being carried, he can't see anything. He can't move. That does not mean that he's dead. Similarly, yeah. All right, you are going. Thank you. Govinda Nandini. Appreciate your company here. You're planning to leave. You can go. We will be finished in a couple of minutes. And devotee. In order to enhance the drama, Radha Govinda leave. The devotee may also accept the role of a servant. He may be a king, but for the satisfaction of the Lord, he may be part of the sweeper. He may play the part of a sweeper. The one who is playing the part of a sweeper, he may perform his role so nicely that the men standing by applaud in appreciation. So the mood of servitude is also a contribution to the service of Krishna. Another example of Shantaras is Radha Kund. Radha Kund, the bathing place of Srimati Radharani, where Krishna enacts his pastimes of conjugal love, is considered to be the highest place in Vrindavan. The gods and devotees all praise Radha Kund. So should we think it to be an ordinary body of water? Rather, how exalted is the position of Radha Kund? And there's Govardhan Hill. That is also a kind of pose. Apparently it is a hill, but Govardhan is worshipped as Krishna himself. He also appears as a stone, a shaligram. He appears in the form of the deities. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, O Lord, please consider me as the dust of your holy feet, expressing himself as a living sajiva, for dust is generally inanimate. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, consider me foot dust. The dust he speaks of is not matter. It is a unit of consciousness filled with knowledge and love. The dust of the Lord's lotus feet is the emblem of knowledge and ecstasy. In the spiritual realm, existence and knowledge is presupposed. But more than that, the souls there are points of divine love in Vrindavan and Navadvip. And with the wholesale conversion of the souls of this world, everywhere we will find the kingdom of God. Krishna's kingdom, Mahaprabhu's kingdom exists. We have only lost the proper angle of vision by which to see it. We must once again acquire that vision. At present, we are in the midst of enemies. But if our angle of vision is changed, we shall think, no, I'm in the midst of friends. And that angle of vision is so broad that one who sees in that way becomes fearless. When Judd Bart was captured by dacoits and taken to the deity of Kali to be sacrificed, his angle of vision was so spacious that he did not care for anything. He thought, whatever is happening is the Lord's will. He is the proprietor and witness of all. And he sees everything as his will, and I have nothing to do with the outcome. This idea, wherever Judd Bart was taking, he went without resistance. Although he was about to be sacrificed, he was unconcerned. He thought, I am in a friendly circle. There is no danger. He was in such a plane of consciousness that no apprehension, no danger could affect him. He thought, I am under Krishna's care. And so it is proved by Judd Bharat's practical example that this angle of vision is not simply philosophy or imagination. It is reality. Krishna's divine will is in the background of everything that exists. And when one comes in connection with that paramount power, that original plane of reality, he will not have any care. He will become fearless. Maya santushta manasak saravat sukhamaya disha. Yet, in the plane of reality where Krishna is worshipped with knowledge, free devotion, the anshunya bhakti, that sort of posing is there. There appears to be fear and concern. That concern is quite different in nature from material cares. Influenced by Yoga Maya, the gopis and Krishna's friends want to know, Krishna is not here, where is he? And in this way, the gopis and coward boys run here and there searching for Krishna. Even the cows are concerned and stop grazing. But all this is conducted by Yoga Maya for the satisfaction of Krishna. Such is the nature of Leela in the plane of Gyan Shunya Bhakti. Gyan Shunya Bhakti means knowledge-free devotion. One doesn't even care for knowledge. No questions in that plane. There are no doubts. No questions means no doubts. It is only faith, love, and trust. Gyan Shunya Bhakti. Feeble. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much, Bruce. Nice section and very nice questions.